some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. The theme of our show tonight is the Fluffy White Rabbit, which is an awesome beer made by our friends at Pretty Things. It's April 12, 2011. I'm here, Jimmy Carboni, with my co-host, Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. Ray, how are you?
I'm well, Jimmy. How are you doing, man?
I heard you had a rock'em sock'em weekend.
This weekend was incredible, man. Brooklyn Flea is down the end of the block of our Brooklyn store, and it's really a lot of fun down there. Great food, great time.
And has Chop Shop started up again on
No,
Sunday?
Chop Shop, that's...
Not yet, huh?
Thank you for asking that. That starts next Sunday, the 17th.
Chop Shop rocks. It was a finalist for one of the Time Out Best New Foods,
absolutely.
Right?
Yes, it was. And it did lose to the Pies and Thighs store. But Chop Shop is it's kind of a floating restaurant that occurs at DBA on Sundays. We're going to expand to Thursdays as well. And you should check it out starting this Sunday at,
great,
at DBA
Chop
Brooklyn.
Shop. We've got our good friend Dave Broderick in, the roving reporter.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hi, Dave. You've been all over the country in the last month, haven't you?
Yeah, maybe. I have. Well, at least across the country. San Francisco for Craft Brewers Conference. Actually, last night with... went on a crawl all over New York City with Brian Strumke of Stillwater and Chad Rich from Farmhouse Tap and Grill. I'm still recovering. I'm on my second beer.
Where did you go last night in New York City?
We started at Anthony's Swift, and then Against the Grain, then this tequila bar called Mayal on 6th Street.
Mayahul, yeah.
Do you know that?
I live on 6th.
What's it called?
Yeah, same guys that someone owns Death and Company, Mayahul. We're talking about cocktails, not
where on 6th Street is that?
It's right off of 2nd Avenue. Yeah.
2nd Avenue? That place was amazing. The food was fantastic. Caitlin ordered so much food, we just pigged out.
Caitlin from Against the Grain?
Against the Grain.
That
and then
great.
She took us some, there was a big mixology party at 9th and C someplace, fancy cocktail place.
Wow.
Outside
the world of beer.
And then Zumschneider.
Zumschneider.
Wow. I just sat home and fell asleep drunk in my sofa.
And Sam Merritt's back. Sam, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
You're the resident Beer Sessions Radio beer sommelier.
Yes.
And I know you have some great Cicerone classes coming up.
Yeah, we've been doing those classes at your place at Jimmy's, you know, for a couple years now, and they're doing really well. And so the next one is April 18th and 25th. There's two spots left. And then May 9th and 23rd, and those are, of course, the Cicerone prep classes that we do for retailers. And the scholarship program with Good Beer Seal is working out really well, so everyone's really excited.
Sam, how many of the Good Beer Seal bars have participated in the Cicerone program? So far,
there's, I think, 5 involved. With people signed up for the scholarship on the wait list, and a lot of interest, so it's really nice.
Could you explain that scholarship program again, just so?
Sure. Yeah, the Good Beer Seal bars get some spots on the house at Jimmy's for these programs, so that we can support the Good Beer Seal bars and their efforts. So yeah, it's really just a few seats in each class, and
how many seats are there in each class?
There's only 13. We take a big hit on the the money making side of things, but it turns out that the bills can be paid by other things. So,
but it's also like $1,000 a seat, right?
No, it's $2,000.
Wow.
No, it's not much, but the thing is, we're just keeping the ball rolling, and the Good Beer Seal bars have responded wonderfully to
all
the
right.
training. So
let's say hello to our friends from greatbrewers.com. We're supported by them. They've got tools like Beer Finder and Beer Sommelier and the Beer Clouds. Check out greatbrewers.com, and we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal. Check out goodbeerseal.com. Our special guest tonight is Robert Hodson from greatbrewers.com, also known as Union Beer. He is probably one of the deans of beer in New York City who has brought more really great craft beer to New York City than anyone else. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jimmy. How you doing?
We had a little pre-show discussion, and we want to ask you some really hard questions, and we're gonna pick your brain about some of the more interesting craft beers that you brought to New York City. One of them is called Nebraska. It's kind of obscure. I've actually never had it at Jimmy's Number 43, and I've always wanted it. I just tried it tonight at Roberta's, the Nebraska IPA. How did you ever find about that brewery, and how did you get to bring it to New York City?
Well, I'd like to tell everybody that that I know everything out there, but the fact is that I received a phone call one day from Paul Kavalak, who's the owner and founder of Nebraska Brewing Company, and he said to me, "Hey, I'd like to get my beer out to New York," which was a surprise to me because I'd never heard of them, and they're kind of a blip on the radar. But I said, "Well, you know, why don't you send me some samples and we'll take a look at the beer. Send me some additional product information, and I'll get back to you. Let you know." And lo and behold, about maybe a week or two later, fresh samples came in, former growlers. They don't have any bottling for the most part over there. They do some cork finished 25 ounce bottles, but he sent some fresh growlers. And the one thing that struck me when I tried the beers was that I think he sent four or five different beers, and all of them were good beers. I mean, usually you get you know, really one or two really pretty good beers, and then the other ones are it's.
Do you sign those breweries on? The ones that just have one good one? Or?
No, I mean, listen, I'm just
I got to quit, Robert.
So, no secrets.
Have you guys
that's got, why we don't. That's why we don't use Cicerone very often.
Rob, so you've got a panel of experts over there at Union that sit around. Like, you get the beer, and it's like you know, 30 or 40 of you guys sit around, and you all like have Cicerone degrees and know your beer stuff and taste it and discuss it. And
I don't know that anybody's ever going to refer to us as experts, but I think the one thing that there's a couple of us. Myself, Paul Bazier, who's the assistant GM. There's a couple of sales managers that we trust their opinions, and we discuss beers, and we think we make pretty good decisions for the most part. We're not always right, but we take a lot of things into consideration. We take the beer, we take the people, and we take the what we feel is the long-term potential of the brand. We take all those things into consideration, and if in our opinion, whether you want to call them an expert opinion or not, if in our opinion the brand has potential and satisfies us on the level of the product itself, the people we have to deal with, and the potential, then we're going to probably bring it in.
So sending fresh growlers of beer from Nebraska to Brooklyn has got to be a feat in itself, and then to have all those beers stay in good shape is an amazing, amazing thing. So even, you know, thinking of it from that perspective, Robert, to have a brewery send you this stuff a week later and then it all tastes good, it's pretty nice, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty nice, and then I liked what Paul had to say, and you know, it's not like Nebraska is going to be the next Sierra Nevada here, but we do feel that, you know, given the nature of the business, and you know, there's three pretty esteemed bar owners sitting amongst us right now, we think that bringing brands like this can bring value to them and to consumers alike. It's funny.
Five people here,
only three of them are bar owners, and they're all trying to figure out who I was talking about. So
math is not our strong point. That's where we're bar owners.
No, but I mean, to us, we want to bring good beer to retailers who then take it to consumers. And it's a challenge. It's fun. We enjoy it. And, you know, again, we hope we make the right decision.
Robert, how much consideration do you give to the suggestions of said bar owners when we find beers on our travels?
Actually, I can answer that question.
Okay.
For Robert.
Isn't that nice, Robert?
I mean, one of the great things about Union, and Robert and Paul in particular, is that if you're out traveling around the country, or you're doing whatever, but you come across a brand and you call them, they'll check it out for sure. And you know, that's how when we were down in Florida and we came across St. Somewhere, Bob Sylvester, and loved the beer, and I called him up and told him about it, and he said, "Yeah, have him send me some samples," and so he did, and now they carry it. So it definitely, you know, the other thing is that they're out there also looking. So half the time they, "Oh, no, we've already had those beers," and but sometimes, you know, you come across something that they haven't. So it makes it fun for us.
Let's pick another beer. We had Nebraska. We talked about that. Let's pick another couple other obscure beers that Union carries. Like Pretty Things.
Pretty Things.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the beer of the show. And we got today.
Jim Barnes is yeah, the like, New York area rep from Pretty Things. And hey, Jim, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me, Jimmy and Ray and all you guys. It's quite a group of esteemed colleagues to be amongst.
What do we have
feel
here,
very
Jim?
Humbled. All right. Well, we are in the midst of spring, so we have brought in onto the table fluffy white rabbits. And simply, this is our springtime hoppy triple. And in a few moments, you're going to be talking with Dan Paquette, our brewer and founder of Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project. And he'll go into greater depth about this beer. But quickly, this is an 8% hoppy triple. And by hoppy, that I mean we use an American hops in this. We use Amarillo, along with a couple of one or two other hop varietals. And we use a special malic acid to help soften it up and give it that fluffiness.
Malic acid.
Yeah. And that's something that Dan's going to explain a little
later. Is that found
later.
Naturally in nature? Is that
It's sort of a process that helps enhance the body a little bit of the beer. Dan Paquette knows a bit more about that, being he's the head brewer. But yeah,
sounds like one of the president's daughters.
It could be,
I can't believe
nice.
I said that.
Nice, Jim.
That's horrible.
Whoa. Getting all
where did that come from?
Politically incorrect.
Terrence Malick.
No, that wasn't the plan. That was
see, we started drinking a little earlier before the show than we usually do.
So it's
the Malick acid.
We should get here late.
I was thinking of the great filmmaker, Terrence Malick. You know,
exactly.
That's a
good one, too. But what is the... There's different types of acid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lysergic.
Yeah, I was going to say there's all kinds of acid.
There's acid house.
We didn't have any of that before the show.
But anyways, yeah.
It's
like,
early, Jim.
Like I said, Dan will be better to explain that. But this is something that we brought out this spring, and we figured, you know, springtime, Easter, why not fluffy white rabbits? And it's been an overwhelming success.
This is good.
Yeah, it's a
fluffy beer.
It is.
It feels fluffy. Yeah. Right? It's very soft.
You want to pet it.
No, it's good. It's a good beer.
It's a beer to pet.
It's a very gentle beer for... How strong is it?
It's 8%.
I'm not getting an 8% burn in this.
Let's
really
go back to Robert. So how did you ever find Pretty Things? Because this is like a pretty obscure... You know, they don't even have a brewery. They're like kind of gypsy brewers.
No, they're a bit of a gypsy brewery. Though, you know, there was quite a little bit of buzz about what Dan Paquette was doing with Pretty Things up in Massachusetts. And so Paul and I, again, Paul Bazier, assistant GM, reached out to Dan and arranged to meet him at Deep Ellum in Boston, which is a great beer bar. And if you've never been to Boston, one of the better beer bars in Boston is Deep Ellum. But so we met Dan over lunch, talked to him for a good 2 hours or so, and... you know, from what we knew about the brand already, I think Dan brings a really beautiful, whimsical quality to his packaging. The beer is absolutely phenomenal. I think he has great vision, and I think he's in for some tremendous success. I wish I could get more beer than I get, but I am grateful for every drop that he brings to the warehouse. But it was just a nice conversation. I think we agreed on a lot of points that are important to both him as a supplier and us as a distributor, and it happened to work out. We clicked early on, and it wasn't long before we had the beer brought into the market. And it's been phenomenal so far. We are selling every ounce of beer we get, and we could sell more if we could get more. But again, he's a gypsy brewer. He's got to service other markets. He's got challenges. But
that saison that you guys had, amazing.
The Jack Doerr.
Jack Doerr, really great.
So define it. Do you guys define yourselves as a gypsy brewery or a nomad brewery? What do you like?
I prefer gypsy. I know we all prefer gypsy because, for one thing, nomads tend to move around a bit. And we've found a really good relationship with Buzzards Bay Brewing Company and working very well with Bill Russell, who's been heading operations there. And it's just a fantastic brewery. Just the geometry of the brew house that Dan is working with is great. The table water there is just fantastic water.
Table water?
Yeah, table water. It's well water. And particularly for the historic beers, and again, Dan will elaborate on this, is that the pH balance is exactly like London table water.
That's scary.
And so that's what really helps to make these historical beers really sort of shine. And no, the brewery that we've been at has been great. We found a really good home there for the time being, and we've worked really well with them and around them.
And so, yeah, I was going to say around them, right? Because don't you brew like in the middle of the night?
We do.
When they're not
there? We do. And in fact, Dan will tell you, they just finished a 4-day straight brew day. They managed to find a schedule where they were able to spend a couple of days in there. But yeah, they tend to go in the middle of the night, like church mice.
So it's not like a contract brewer where you give a recipe to another brewer to brew it. So you guys go in there and physically make the beer yourselves.
Oh yeah, Dan brews every drop of beer.
It's not
a
contract brew.
No, not at all.
You're just renting the time at the brewery to brew your own stuff with your own ingredients.
It's a midnight brew,
right?
Is what it is.
I like
midnight
that.
Brew.
Only like the full moon. It's like drinking with a chef and then coming home with the chef and having them cook something up from what you've got in the kitchen. Yeah,
exactly. Wow. Exactly.
But then you guys have your own tanks to store
things. I was going
to
say, what about the do you use their fermenters? And
oh yeah.
So you tie up their fermenters. How does that work for them?
Well, we work around them because they. They're brewing they're brewing much smaller batches of beer. They have a brand that they call Just Beer, and they just sell out of the brewery. And so they mainly bottle, and so with that they just brew just a very little. They don't brew near as much beer as what we're brewing. So
because it's not as popular as yours, probably.
Well, they've been focusing a lot on wine because they've always been a winery, and so they had just really shifted, really focusing.
Wait, they've always been a winery?
Yes, Buzzards Bay. They have a winery there, and it's from what I'm hearing, it's really, really good wine.
Well, I know that Boston's a big wine
Buzzards
market.
Bay? And why are there so many buzzards there?
If you don't know Massachusetts, it's near Cape Cod.
It is. Westport, right. Massachusetts.
It's beautiful. It actually gets Westport's a little beautiful. Bit of the Gulf Stream. It's actually kind of nice down there.
It's actually an appellation. I think it's the Heritage Food Coast or something like that.
Yeah,
that whole area. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
But yeah,
it's
Westport.
Beautiful.
It's gorgeous, gorgeous countryside. I mean, it's like, you know, you're surrounded by, like, you know, a lot of just interesting area. You got Providence on one side, you got New Bedford, and then you're out around the South Shore there, you know, I forget some of the towns, but...
But the water's good.
The water is fantastic.
The water table.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's a wicked, wicked fantastic water, so... But, yes.
Well, we'll be going to take a short break, and we come back, we'll do some more impersonations and accents with Jim Barnes from Pretty Things and Fluffy White Rabbit on Beer Sessions Radio.
Take me to heart, and I'll always love you, and nobody can make me do wrong. Take me for granted, leaving love unsure, makes willpower. Temptation strong. A woman's only human. You should understand.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Sponsored by GreatBrewers.com and supported by GoodBeerSeal.com. Well, here we are, Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and Ray Dieter from DBA. And we've got a little question that came in an email while we were talking. And it goes like this. It's from Thomas in Brooklyn. And thanks for writing in, Thomas. It says, hey, Ray, do you like cask beer on Easter weekend?
Well,
Now, that must have something to do with the fluffy white rabbit. I don't know.
Clearly. Now, it's funny that he should ask about that, because there will be a lot of cask ale available at the DBA in Williamsburg, because we are having our fifth Williamsburg Cask Ale Festival.
Is it on Easter weekend?
It is on Easter weekend.
Dude, you're so controversial.
Well, you know, Jesus took the water and turned it into wine, and he tasted it, and then he spit it out because he didn't like it. Then he turned the wine into beer.
Wow.
And he swallowed it, and it was good. And so we have beer for Easter.
I'm going to go with that.
You go with that, Robert?
I like that. I think it's accurate.
I think it's beautiful.
So that's the whole
principle. Well, this leads us to our second question, and since
Sunday
we have the fluffy white rabbit, we're going to ask all of our esteemed panel here what they think of the American versions of traditional Belgian styles. Robert Hodson, what do you think of the American version of the traditional Belgian styles?
Well, you know, obviously it depends on the brewery, but to me, the best beer being brewed is in America. I mean, across the landscape, when you consider all the beer you can get, all the variations of style, there's nothing holding the brewers back in terms of a Rhein-Heinz-Gebot or any of that nonsense. You have, not the Rhein-Heinz-Gebot nonsense, but you have American brewers who are uninhibited, and they're producing some of those fantastic beers because they're not afraid and they're unchallenged. And I think that bodes well for the American consumer and for beer lovers. And listen, beer that comes from abroad, whether it's Belgium, Germany, Scandinavia, Asia, there's phenomenal beers coming in. But when you look soup to nuts as a brewing nation, I think America is at the top of their game right now. And I think it's a great time to be in this business. And I think it's great to represent so many great domestic craft brewers. And as it relates to Belgian-style beers, when you look at breweries like Allagash, like Omegang, like Pretty Things, I mean, you can go on and on. And there's just a tremendous amount of phenomenal beers. And how do you choose which is best? I mean, that's the great thing. You can just go from one beer to the next and be just as happy.
Sam?
So this is Belgian style that we're talking about?
I mean, how do you feel about, American versions of traditional Belgian-style beers?
Well, it's like Elvis Presley never wrote a lot of songs, but he's definitely an American. So, you know, as far as Belgian beers, yeah.
What?
I didn't understand that, but it sounded good.
I get it.
It's about interpretation, It's like, Frank Sinatra is another interpretive guy. He never wrote his own songs, but he's made them his, and he's
But he
American.
Sang a lot of Belgian
was
songs.
Was he a brewer?
He sang a lot of Belgian songs. He was crazy about Rodenbach. Nobody tells him that. But if we're talking about Belgian beer today, I have to raise a glass to Pierre Selles, who revived the Belgian white style.
That's true.
Which a lot of these beers are based on.
Here's to Pierre.
To
Pierre
Selles.
Cheers.
I've had the pleasure to know him over the years.
But, the American interpretation of Belgian stuff is great, and it could be so right on, like Allagash, for instance, or the Omegang. And then you can turn and actually have people like Blue Moon getting involved, and although they call it a Belgian-style white, it's so far from the traditional sense of the word, but it's an interpretation.
Sam, in your Cicerone class, which I've taken, which you do a great job in, you put the student on an island.
Yeah.
And
La Isla Una Cerveza.
What do? You pick your last beer or your
you
only
pick the beer.
Beer
that you could get for 2 weeks and not have any other beer.
And what beer would you pick? Because nobody ever asked you that.
It's my game, so I pick whatever hits me at the moment, so there's so many.
Oh, come on. You got to pick something.
So actually, right now, I would have this fluffy rabbit.
This fluffy white rabbit.
It's
huh?
beautiful. It's beautiful.
And what about Ray? What would you do? You got 2 weeks on a desert island. You picked one beer.
One beer or one six-pack. Now, if I had to pick one beer to be on an island, I what it'd be. Fuller's ESP. You can't go wrong with that beer.
Yeah. After all these years.
Now, there's a guy in the Midwest. Have you been following Jay Wilson, who's keeping himself alive on Bock beer for a day for the 45 days of Lent? And he's more than halfway through. Yeah, and he's doing really well. He's drinking four beers a day.
No, I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
Robert, have you heard of him?
I haven't heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
But he's my idol already.
No solid food.
Wow.
No, it's just beer and water for 45 days.
So this is
days.
Like one of the traditional kind of the monks
this
diet.
This is what the monks did.
During Lent.
I think we have to do that beer. Next year.
I can do that. Years,
right.
Let's do it. Let's all do
yeah.
that.
So,
can you imagine how I'll much better this show would be
you
if we didn't eat
now.
Food?
Read his blog.
Can we just drink beer?
I think that's something we can... Look at this. Nobody's... Yeah. This is the most exciting thing we've talked about in like 2 years.
I love this idea.
We have to do this next year.
And it's all for science.
Yeah.
It's wow. all for science.
So, Jim Barnes, will Pretty Things make us a Lenten Bock beer for next year?
To live on for 40 days?
Please. Well, we'll look into it. I mean, my name in the company, because of Beer Advocate, because of my handle name, is Bock Tech. It's been, you know, singled down to Bocky. So, yeah, eventually I'd like to see Dan brew a Bock beer and, you know, maybe
Chewbacky.
Call it Bachminster Fuller.
Chewbacky.
Bachminster Fuller.
Bachminster Fuller. It'd be a...
we can go a lot of ways.
Now it's time to test your...
Let's change the subject now.
Guys, let's one more time. Let's test your Bach knowledge. Okay. David, what's your favorite Bach beer?
Wow, that's tough. I would say... you know, my favorite Bach beer right now is made by Alan Van And up at Von Trapp, I'll say.
Wow. Robert Hudson, what's your favorite Bach beer?
I'll go with the Iyengar Celebrator.
Good one. Sam Merritt, what's your favorite Bock-style beer?
Spaten Optimator.
Nice. Jim Barnes, what's your favorite Bock beer?
Well, and it's this is purely sentimental, circa 96, 97, when I began to drink craft beer. The one beer craft beer I discovered was a Bock-style beer, and it was Samuel Adams' Double Bock. I know that's not an original German beer, but they come from a German lineage, in the Cook family. So, yeah, that, I think, you know, sir, going back, that's my favorite.
Not Cook.
Now it's Cook. Cook.
So it's Jim Cook.
But right. But no, it's, yeah, going back to when they were brewing that, you know, as a seasonal beer, that was.
You know, Dave, on the radio, sometimes we mispronounce things and we say some crazy things just to make sure that people are actually listening. Yeah.
So. To make
Dave
sure
is listening.
Ray, what's
make
your
sure
favorite
I'm listening.
Bock? I'm dying.
My favorite Bock beer?
Yeah.
I got to say, I go old school, Paul Honor, Salvatore.
Paul Honor, Salvatore.
Yeah,
I
kind of grew
say,
up on that. So.
I got to also say, it's not my favorite
now,
style of beer.
Do you say Salvatore or Salvador?
Salvatore is right. How I say it. But it's not my favorite style of beer. I mean, I'll have one pint, you know, when it comes out every spring, and that's it. Pretty much then, and it's kind of like that with a lot of my customers too. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, it's springtime. Let's get some Salvatore, or you know, whatever ATOR beer is out
really
there.
Fun is the Helles Bock. Brooklyn made one as a
Really,
do you know who has one? Do you know Sierra Bock. Nevada has the Glissade? Robert, is that a like a spring Bock? A pale Bock,
early spring beer, which was a spring Bock, and the Glissade is more so the My Bock.
Yeah, we got some of the Glissade. We tried that.
Smutty Nose, for that matter, their My Bock is really.
They have
really
a My Bock
nice.
Too.
Yes.
See, wow, it's quite a room of beer experts here.
And Bock means goat in German. Just so you know,
means goat. That's correct.
You know, if you wanted to spend some money, you could give money to everyone in this room, and you can learn a lot about beer. Because the guys in beer
send
education make
send
a lot
now.
Of money. So.
And we'll take it. We'll take that money.
Well,
and we'll put it right back in and buy beer with it.
But this is fun. I want to say, and I think Ray will join with me, that having Robert Hudson on board is always a treat. He's a guy that has been part of the New York craft beer scene going way back to its beginning with the Craft Brewers Guild when it was part of the Brooklyn Brewery. And that's how many of us started buying our good beer.
And I've known Robert way before he was at that
even
job.
Before that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Much and Muck, remember?
Much
and
Muck.
Yeah, when he was selling Old soda. School. No,
that's
just
right.
Kidding. He was selling beer, too. Brissalbach. And
yeah, I've known Robert for quite a while.
Yeah. That.
Oh, we have another question here now. We have an email question from Lisa J. in Baltimore. Wow, it's awesome. We have national listeners. We have listeners from Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and from Baltimore. Lisa J., thanks for writing in. Her question is about sour beers. Everyone I know seems to be crazy for sour beers. So far, I'm not getting it. What am I missing? Is this just a fad that will fade away? Or have I just not had the right sour beer? Ray, what do you think about sour beers?
Well, I think there's no wrong sour beer, really. I love sour beer. I've loved it for a long time. I mean, whether you're talking about a Rodenbach Grand Cru, which is a great beer, more malty than say, a lambic ale, which is also sour and kind of bitter. It's kind of a fad now, but it's a great beer. It's a great summertime beer, really. It's really refreshing, palate cleansing, and it's a lovely beverage.
Yeah, I think she should, you know, there's some that are more sour than others, and start with something that maybe it's just tart, or you know, and then work your way into it. But it's definitely an acquired taste, but there's quite a few out there that are very approachable. And you can sort of work your way into it. I'd say that. Same with hops. You know, it's the same thing. Like some are, you know, you're not going to start.
Isn't
with
there a trend though? That there's a lot. There's a lot. We talk about session beers, but there's something. It seems like every interesting brewer is trying to play around with wild yeasts and sour beers. I mean, do you see the guys that you know doing that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people getting into it, and which means that they're experimenting as well. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. So. Sometimes it's a little maybe too acidic, you know, and sometimes it's
vinegary.
Yeah, and sometimes it's beautiful. So you just have to, you know, they're learning. Remember, we haven't been doing this that long in this country. So there's a lot of experimentation going on.
In my opinion, sometimes flavors just don't work for certain people. And I've always said that when people tell me I don't really like beer, I just usually tell them you haven't had the right beer. But conversely, if you are trying a beer style that really doesn't suit you, just because other people are enjoying them and liking them doesn't mean you have to like it. You have to trust your own palate, and you have to drink what you want to drink. So maybe it's Pilsners you like, maybe it's Hefeweizens, maybe it is sour beers, but I think you have to trust your own palate and go with what works for you. And you can't necessarily force it. If it doesn't taste good, probably doesn't taste good to you.
Do you remember when you were 12 and you had that first beer and you hated it, and then you just kept doing it until you finally liked it?
Everyone makes a face. But the thing is with sour ales is that you can achieve non-sweetness through other means besides hops. And that's where sour ales come in, is that you're not using hops. And by the way, sour ales include all your Belgian lambics and also all of your Belgian wit beers, your Blanche beers. So they don't have to be super sour like a Belgian Flemish red or a brown. But it's a great place to go if you are looking for things that aren't super hoppy and you want a very quenching thing. So all for sour ales. But it is at fad stage right now, and we'll see how long it lasts.
The one thing that I will say is that I find often when I get like a second-tier craft beer, and there's too much sweetness. So the flip side is I really appreciate the slightly sour, or I just want a really dry beer too, you know, drier or sour. But we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with our guests about Fluffy White Rabbit. We'll be back in a moment on Beer Sessions Radio.
So you told all the boys that you were gonna take me out. Even had the nerve to make a bet. Yes, you did. That I would give in. All my love, you would win. But you haven't. You haven't won it yet. Romeo. You got them running to and fro. Yes, you have. But I don't want a one night thrill. I want a love that's for real. And I can tell by your line, yours is not the lasting kind. You took me for a.
This is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience, how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
Rock on. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. We love the main course, Patrick and Katie. It's one of the best shows on the network, Heritage Radio Network. Here we are back on Beer Sessions Radio. We did have another listener email in, and we are actually sad to say that Pierre Celis, one of the great Belgian-born and, you know...
Yeah, Pierre
you know,
died.
You know
over
White
the weekend.
Beer, you know Celis White, you know Hoegaarden, you know Pierre Celis.
Pierre was responsible for reviving the white ale style in Belgium. He was the son of a dairyman, but he turned and revived that style at the brewery Hoegaarden, and then came back and opened Celis Brewery in Texas outside of Austin. He was one of the pioneers in the craft beer movement here in the U.S.
And
also
a really lovely guy,
really sweet man.
Ray, did you know him?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's been to DBA a number of times and had some events there, and I used to run into him at different festivals around the country and in Europe. And he was just a really lovely, sweet man. He's going to be missed.
Well, let's just say thank you to Justin Kennedy for writing in and letting us know about that. Well, we've been talking about sour beers and pretty fluffy white rabbits. Now I'm feeling kind of depressed. I remember when
there's fluffy white rabbits here.
Have a drink,
Pierre. I'm have a drink. Yes. What the hell?
Yeah, it's a Pierre.
But we've got some special guests calling in. This whole show was kind of built around Dan and Martha Paquette from Pretty Things. Yeah. And are you guys on the air now?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good. How's it going, Jimmy?
Good. We've got some great friends of yours here. We've got your buddy Jim Barnes, Ray Dieter, Dave Broderick, Sam Merritt, and Robert Hodson. So
wow.
It's all your beer
all the
friends.
Cool people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan. How are you, man?
Hey, good. How's it going?
So right. Where are you guys right now?
We're in the car. We're driving from Union to Davis Square in Somerville.
So you're in Massachusetts, Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yeah, we are in our hometown.
And what are you doing there? Are you making a sales call? You're just on your way to your house? What's the deal?
We're going to go drink some of our beer at a place called Zacco's, which is also a bowling alley.
Are you going bowling? Are you going bowling tonight, man?
Yeah, we're going Candlepin. We're going proper New England, how do you score it, bowling.
Candlepin is New England bowling. So if there's a raging debate going on in your area, where are the best beer bars? Is Somerville, Massachusetts, or Allston?
Well, you know, when people ask me about beer bars, I know I'm going to forget somebody, but you know, you got Deep Ellum, you've got Monk Cell, you've got Lord Hobo, and you know, I like Red Bones a lot. They're doing something completely different. You know, for me, my styles of beer, you know, I'm really into, you know, kooky European stuff. So I end up, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, hanging out over at a place like Deep Ellum or Dave's place there, Monk Cell or Lord Hobo. So that's a little bit, when I'm looking for more American beers, I mean, Red Bones has got this sort of great, I don't even know what you call it, barbecue.
Hey, Dan.
Beer joint sort of thing.
Dan, this is Ray Dieter. Is there any good beer bars right, like, in central Boston? Like, if I, like, was a tourist in Boston, where would I go? Like,
You'd have a hard time. Like, the areas that tourists visit tend to not be places that are accessible to the rest of us. You know what I mean? So,
right,
like,
right.
Eastern Standard is a great place that happens to be basically right next to Fenway Park. And I understand the Citizen, although, you know, shame on us for not having gone there yet, is a pretty good place. That's, again, right near Fenway. But it's been one of the things that people are working on, you know, bringing a beer bar to the downtown area.
Right.
But, you know, for the most part, it does evacuate, you know, after, you know, 7 o'clock.
So all the good drinking's done kind of in the outlying areas, in the suburbs, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, you cross the river, you don't have a hard time. Or if you go towards your Allston, Brookline, Brighton, where people actually live, you don't have a hard time finding good beer.
There's a good bar in Brookline I went to. What was that place called? It's got loads of taps and...
Oh, yeah. Well, there's... Dave Scolo has basically three beer bars. Public House / Monk Cell, and then
right.
He's got the Roadhouse I'm sorry. American Craft used to be called Roadhouse. Right in a small area in Brookline. So there are some good places there.
Yeah, it's Boston is a great destination for good beer, but it's sometimes it's hard to find all the right place to hit.
Dan, this
I want to say that like Brookline is great. Public House has been a home place for of mine for ages, and that's how I got to know Dan Paquette and so many great people in the beer community there in Boston. So used to DJ there for a bit. So it's a great home, and I learned so much about beer there at the Public House. So I want to give mad props to David Ciccolo and all his staff there, Jeremy and the rest of the gang for really just caring so much about beer. So
That's right.
So Dan, this is Dave. I just want we're actually guzzling Fluffy White Rabbit. It's the name the name of the show tonight. And I just you know what you want to talk
more?
About it like your this is your take on a triple. And so you want to sort of tell us what was going on in your mind?
So you know, with this, we actually didn't get the stupid pun that turned out to be Hoppy Triple. For some reason, it avoided us until we made the label.
I didn't even get it until you just said it.
Yeah. Actually, we wanted to make a hoppy triple. And, you know, one of the things I love about the whole Belgian beer scene is there are Easter beers, and people are really into Easter there. You know, Boss Kuhn comes to mind.
I love Boss Kuhn, yeah.
The first year, that's it. So the first year we made Baby Tree, and then that became a year-round beer because we just stopped saying no to people and just made it year-round. And then we wanted something to replace it that would also be Eastery. So we made this beer. You know, it's got Amarillo, Sots, and Steering Golding hops. So it's a blend of cultures. I've seen those hops in combination before and really loved them. It's pretty much all German Pils malt throughout, and then a couple of different yeast strains. But the one little, it's like the most insignificant thing that I do in any beer, but it seems to make a big deal for this, is in the brew house, you know how you're always, you need to acidify the mash. You need to get the pH of the mash down so that the enzymes are working properly to break down the starch to sugars. Well, you often use you know, boring things like calcium sulfate and
malic acid.
Yeah, so we're using malic acid in this situation. We're using a very small amount just to bring the pH down, and it changes the water chemistry in a way that you know, from the mouth feel to the way that the hops are absorbed into the beer.
Dan,
the ester profile. Yes,
you're totally geeking out right now. So,
sorry.
So I'm just going to interrupt. We had a conversation earlier about the difference between a contract brewery and a gypsy brewery. Or a nomad brewery. And you guys, and I just found out from Jim that you guys like don't like hand a recipe over to a brewery or another brewer. You guys actually come on and kind of and take over the brewery yourselves.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean,
how does
I've
that
been
work?
Brewing professionally for almost 20 years, so what we wanted to do was, I would have loved for someone to hand me $2 million to build a brewery, but that didn't happen.
That's
so what
you need?
We decided to do was to spend our little bit of money and go and rent somebody else's brewery. And that's basically how it works. There's other legal things involved, of course.
Sure.
But for the most part, we go in, you know, Martha and I go in the middle of the night or very early in the morning, and we start brewing beer. The tanks are there.
So you just come up, kind of take over the brewery at midnight and, like, brew your stuff? Kind of like a vampire brewer, right?
Yeah,
sun comes out.
All kinds of things, vagrant brewers, and
he is very pale. I will say, he's a very pale person.
Yes, he is. So, basically, your beer comes from Satan. Is that what it is?
Well, but look, you know what?
Bunnies,
I wouldn't say that.
Look
because
that's why he's counteracting it with bunnies.
Dan, how are you, buddy?
Good. How's it going, Listen. Jimmy? I just want to say one of the secrets of Pretty Things is we actually, and this is no lie, but I won't give you any more information than this. We have an apprentice brewer with us who's a Trappist monk. So there's, I don't think Satan is involved.
Wow. Awesome.
That's a good way. That's a good way to keep him away.
He's going to carry a truck of smoke with you.
I'm sure.
I'm bring it back. Wait, guys, hold away on. From Satan, away from weirdness. Let's get back to the essence of pretty
Praise
things.
Lord,
your historical recipes.
Yes.
Because what you guys do, you did last year the 1901. You guys do some really cool, interesting beers, and you're echoing back to like 100 years ago, which is when I think that things were really good, whether it's food or drink. How did you get into that? Because that's like the coolest thing going on.
We're into historic, you know, history in general. But with beer, one of the things was that we sort of over the years became friends with Ron Pattinson, who some of you might know. He's a beer historian based out of Amsterdam, and he's English, and he really specializes in sort of late 1700s to approximately World War II era beers, and he sort of goes in a direction or goes further than anyone else does, and he spends a lot of time debunking myths. And you know, after brewing for a bunch of years in England, I knew that there was a rich history there, and we thought it would be fun to explore and recreate beers just exactly as they were done on the day.
Dan?
So,
What's a beer myth?
What's a beer myth?
Yeah.
Beer is strong is a beer myth.
Good one, Sam.
Yeah, that's like a beer myth, yeah.
Okay.
Well, with English beer, I think people think that they've always been dainty 4% beers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that was the case before they started taxing them based on the alcohol content.
Right. It's all about taxation. You're right.
Yeah, and if you look at a lot of the Belgian scene, not to take anything away from them, but Rodenbach is essentially a 19th century English brewery preserved in amber.
That's actually very correct, but they got rid of the cedar tanks, haven't they?
Now
it's all steel again.
Primary fermentation, Rodenbach, sure.
All right, let's come back. Hold on. We're going to wrap this up soon, but David and Robert, you guys get a few more questions.
Yeah, I had a quick question. Dan and I spoke out at CBC. We had a drink, and
that's right.
And you started, you said some numbers and stuff about how well you were doing, I'll let you say that if you want, but it seems like you've sort of found this new business model. And I spoke to Brian Strumpke last night, and he was saying exactly the same thing, that it was really working well for him financially. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Like, is this kind of a new way forward for maybe other people as well?
Well, it isn't, I think. I mean, I think we were lucky that things panned out for us. We happened to come into, I think, sort of one of the great markets for beer in the U.S. that wasn't served by enough breweries, so that kind of helped us, you know, not having to go into business with debt, and we still don't have any debt. You can't beat that ever.
What's that like? I can't imagine that.
Well, you know what? We just moved from England, so we had nothing. So we started a zero debt life, and it's been really good.
You're going to run for president. Hold on. And let's get Robert. Let's get Robert ask you a question too, because Robert, you know, are you interested in the historical recipes that he's doing? What are you most interested in about with Pretty Things?
Well, with Pretty Things, I know that Dan's long-term goal is to not be a gypsy brewery, but to have his own brewery. And so I would just ask where he is in terms of those plans and how close they are to becoming reality for you.
Well, you know, Robert, we've had a few opportunities, you know, pop up, and we're sort of exploring things. It's true. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, brewers really want to be in control. Being a brewer is about being controlled. Being a winemaker is about sort of letting nature take its course. But brewers, you know, at the end of the day, they really want that control. So having a facility will definitely take me there. That said, we're so busy now, just being Pretty Things, that it's sort of been put on the back burner.
So you're not looking for your own brewery?
Sorry, Robert.
I'm always looking. If somebody comes to me and says, you know, I've got this developer and I got a great space and I can help you find the bank money and all that kind of thing, I, you know, I'd we'll definitely explore as far as we can until we decide we can or can't. But I would love a home for our brand. I think we have a lot to offer.
I'd like more Fluffy White Rabbit because I was promised it at Jimmy's number 43. I ordered it, it didn't come through, and I want more of the 1901 KK that you made last year.
Dan, I'll also say that Ray Dieter, Dave Broderick, and Jimmy Carbone have all made a fortune in the bar business, and I'm sure they'd be happy to fund a brewery for you.
And we'd like to set you up in Vermont, actually, right up by my farm.
Oh, wow.
We got plenty of space up there. Well, my farm's really small, unfortunately, but we got huge land right next to us.
Dave, size doesn't matter.
Wow, you guys are setting us up.
It does with farms, Ray.
It's all about moving forward. All right, let's give a shout-out to the Good Beer Seal. We've got some great check out our calendar and blog on goodbeerseal.com. Coming up tomorrow at Blind Tiger Ale House, conveniently, we're celebrating Elysian Brewing Company's 15th anniversary. On Saturday, April 16th, at Jimmy's number 43, the April Sours, the best of Lambic and sour beers, hosted by beermenus.com. And Monday, April 18th, at Beer Table, 12% Imports presents the Evil Twin Dinner. What is Evil Twin? Check it out at Beer Table on Mondays, because I don't know what
it is. That's a great beer.
Is it? Evil Twin?
I do, yeah, from 12%. Great stuff.
Anything else going on that we should know about?
Liquids of Interest, Jimmy.
Every Monday?
Every Monday night.
And Dave, anything else coming up at Blind Tiger?
We got Garrett Oliver a week from tomorrow.
Jim, special events with Pretty Things?
Yes, we
in
do.
In New York City?
Yes. Dan and Martha are coming down this week. Tomorrow, Dan will be speaking with the MBAS, Malted Barley Appreciation Society, at Mugs. And we'll hopefully have one of our beers on that night there at Mugs. But the big,
that's at Mugs Ale House.
Mugs Ale House, yes. Not everybody on there is a regular there. But that, and then of course we got a big social at Browery Lane on Thursday night, so definitely come out to that. That'll be a rollicking good time.
And Sam?
It's the Pony Bar's second anniversary this week, so big shout out to the Pony Bar, a Good Beer Seal Bar, and
Dan McLaughlin, who's getting married June 17th.
Wow. And that's a day before my baby's due, so we got a lot to celebrate.
I'll be at the wedding for you, Sam.
That's my wedding anniversary too.
And to Pierre Celis.
Well, hey, but then again, a shout-out to Pierre Celis. We're sorry that he's a great man. And he's gone.
I read on the web today, may he ferment in peace.
Peace out. Well, I'd also like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can also find Beer Sessions Radio on Facebook. And thanks to Ray, Robert, Sam, Jim, Dan, and Martha for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Songs I have casually mentioned.
All right.
The fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good.
Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.